Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. And with us this week is Dr. Syed Razi, thoracic surgeon at JFK University Medical Center. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Joel. Thank you for the introduction.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. I would imagine when you go to medical school to be a thoracic surgeon, the first thing they teach you is how to spell thoracic. Is that accurate?
That's interesting, yes.
That's interesting.
But you're absolutely right. It is thoracic.
Yeah, thoracic. The scope of thoracic surgery, the services, it's wide. We're going to cover a handful of them today. But when it comes to the lungs and lung cancer, awareness is important. Many of us not even aware how important the screenings can be, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned about the awareness aspect. There is a certain high-risk population, which makes up the highest proportion of patients with lung cancer. But there is a growing trend in patients without any risk factors, and we are seeing a significant proportion of those patients too, oftentimes young and healthy. So it's very important to be aware of any symptoms that you develop out of the ordinary and get a timely workup for that. When it comes to high-risk population, those who are smokers for more than 20-pack years of smoking history, or even those who have quit within the last 15 years, United States Preventive Task Force recommends between the ages of 50 to 80, those patients should undergo regular screening CT scan, and the best resource for those patients are really just to reach out to your primary care or to your pulmonologist and inquire about it. And then follow up with those scan results and take appropriate, timely action based on the results.
Okay, so now that's for smokers who have smoked for the period of time that you mentioned. What about people who've never smoked? Are these screenings still important?
So we don't have, as of now, any evidence that screening helps in patients who have no significant risk factors, especially those who have never smoked. But with further research and further understanding of the tumor biology, hopefully in the near future, we may have certain blood tests that may become available and be able to identify patients who may be at risk of developing cancer. But so far, screening lung cancer CT scan has no role for patients who are non-smokers.
Now, what about someone like me who, I'm in my 50s, I smoked for close to 10 years up until I was 20-something? I can't even remember how old I was. 28, let's say. What about someone who smoked in the past? So we're talking like 25 years ago, I stopped. Is it a good idea to get those screenings?
So you brought up a very good point. Patients who have a remote history of cancer, every year passing by after you quit smoking, your risk reduces. It never reduces to zero, but it does become equivalent to what we call the population risk. So after about 15 or 20 years of quitting smoking, your risk is essentially the same as general average population.
Okay.
And that's what the data is also showing, and that's what the U.S. Preventive Task Force is recommending, that for those patients who quit within the last 15 years should be the ones who should get screening. We don't have any data to suggest that screening for those patients who have quit more than 20 years, if that really plays a role in with regards to the screening results.
That makes sense. So let's talk about the symptoms. You mentioned early on in our conversation about if you have any symptoms. What are the symptoms that one might have for lung cancer?
So it's a wide topic, because about close to 30-40% of the patients with lung cancer are the ones with the relatively early stage, where the cancer is localized in the lung or may have just spread to the lymph nodes. At that stage, we don't expect any of those patients to have any symptoms.
Mm.
By the time symptoms are appearing and they are directly related to patients' cancer, either because of cancer invading into certain structures or because of the biology from cancer, at that point, generally the tumor is advanced. But it's important to understand that if there is any new symptoms that that patient is experiencing, like they are developing cough that is not going away, they are having it's sputum production, and oftentimes it's blood streak, or they are losing weight, they feel low in energy, and they have this chronic cough that, you know, after consulting with their primary care, not getting any answers, best step is to, you know, follow up with the primary care or your pulmonologist and get a CT scan. And that will most likely show if there is any underlying abnormality.
But are you saying that if someone has symptoms, chances are the cancer is has been there for a while? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Again, you have to take, you know, individual case into context. But what I mean by symptoms is the symptoms will be more pronounced the higher the stage of the tumor is.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, the further along they are, and the more symptoms they have, that would seem to match. If you have less symptoms, you might be... Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying it might be... You might be at a far along at a later stage, but have no symptoms.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Correct.
And I will actually give you an interesting observation that I have seen over my career. When I was a postdoc research fellow, this was back in 2009, I was looking at the statistics of lung cancer. And at that time, 60-70% of the lung cancers would be diagnosed at a very high stage, when the stage 3 or stage 4. But over the years, especially over the last decade, with screening and increased utilization of CT scans, we are seeing that we are diagnosing cancer at a relatively early stage now. Almost 40% of those cancers are now diagnosed at an early stage. And I'm hoping that that number will continue to increase, where we are able to diagnose patients much earlier.
Talking with Dr. Syed Razi, thoracic surgeon at JFK University Medical Center. Again, lung cancer. What are some of the treatment options?
So before we come to the treatment for lung cancer, we have to understand what is the stage of that cancer. When I see a patient who has a diagnosis of cancer or even a suspicion for lung cancer, I do the workup for the diagnosis and staging hand in hand. And the goal is to do it in a timely fashion to get the patient to the treatment phase as soon as possible. By staging, what I mean is how far the tumor has spread, and there are certain components to it. One is the size of the tumor, the location, and also whether the tumor is involving the lymph nodes. It depends upon where those lymph nodes are, whether they are within the lung or whether they are outside the lung. And then the last component is if there is any evidence of distant growth. When we diagnose the cancer or when we are doing the staging, we incorporate multiple strategies. Oftentimes involves a different type of nuclear scan, which is called a PET CT scan. And in certain cases, we need to often biopsy the lymph nodes that I perform and our group perform at JFK. It's called endobronchial ultrasound. Once we have all that information and we have stage, the stage goes from 1, 2, 3, and 4, then we can determine what is the best treatment for that patient. The treatment is also evolving at a very rapid pace. In broad terms, you can break down the treatment into three categories: surgery, systemic treatment, and radiation treatment. The surgery and radiation are essentially providing local control at the disease site, and the systemic treatment providing treatment systemically, and traditionally it's in the form of chemotherapy, but now we have targeted agents for specific gene mutations or immunotherapy based on immune checkpoint inhibitor status for the particular cancer. Suffice it to say, we have the technology advancement to personalize each patient's lung cancer care.
Which is the best of the three to need? Like, if I had lung cancer, and what would be best for me? Do the radiation, the surgery, or the systemic?
So again, answer lies, and that's a very good question. The answer lies with the stage. For very early stage, stage one, surgery remains the gold standard treatment.
Surgery, okay.
Where we remove a certain part of the lung, preferably in an anatomic fashion, and do a thorough lymph node dissection to clear the lymph node basin where the tumors may spread to. And if it truly remains early stage, then that's all patients need. But as the stage advances and there is evidence of disease spread to the lymph nodes, then we have to bring, because that tumor has already declared its capability of spreading. In that case, we have to bring in the systemic treatment. Mm-hmm. And again, as I mentioned, the choice between chemotherapy, immunotherapy, targeted therapy, really depends on what type of genetic mutation the patients harbor. And if we can pinpoint those specific treatment lines for those patients, then really those treatments are the best option. And to complete the picture, radiation treatment really has a very significant role to play to control local site in advanced cancers, alongside with chemotherapy or other form of systemic treatment. There is a special form of radiation treatment called SBRT, which is stereotactic body radiotherapy or CyberKnife, and that is an alternative to patients who cannot tolerate surgery because of other risk factors, or just those who don't want surgery. So we have that alternative treatment modality for early stage lung cancer as well.
Okay, and I just want to clarify, when you say if surgery is the option or the one that is chosen, that's all they'll need most likely is just the surgery?
Only for very early stage.
And right.
To be very specific, we are looking at stage 1A only. For the most part, we have growing evidence that even patients with stage 1B, 2A, and higher are the ones who may benefit from additional treatment other than just surgery. And that, again, I attribute to our understanding of the tumor biology that has grown tremendously over the last decade, that we are able to offer patients multi-modality treatment. And really, the goal is to prolong survival. Because if you think about it, who is at the highest risk of getting lung cancer? Somebody who already had it. And the number one goal for us is, after getting them through the surgery, and if it's early stage, then to keep them cancer-free. So we go on a very exhaustive surveillance protocol afterwards that our group offers at JFK. And again, our goal is that if there is any evidence of cancer recurrence, we pick it up early. Or if there is any treatment option that is available for that patient, to keep their risk profile low or to extend their survival further, then that's where additional treatments, systemic treatment, chemotherapy or immunotherapy comes into play.
Talking with Dr. Syed Razi, a thoracic surgeon at JFK University Medical Center. Now, you mentioned that the treatment options are constantly changing, always advancing. From when you first started, let's say, medical school, what have you seen through the years as being a thoracic surgeon, the changes and the advances?
That's a great question. You know, one of the things that I have observed, sentimentally speaking, cancer used to be considered a death sentence. Once you hear the term cancer, you know, all hope is lost. This is what I'm telling. My perception was back in medical school in early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very encouraging and very rewarding to see that now cancer, and I think we are only just scratching the surface here. We are now coming to a point where we are considering cancer as not terminal, but something like a chronic disease, something that, for example, patients have blood pressure, patients have diabetes. I'm sure there was a point when diabetes was considered a death sentence,
mm-hmm.
talking about 100 years ago. But now we come to live with it. And I think now we have the means for certain select patients where with a multimodality treatment option, we can make them cancer-free. And somebody who has just a long history of with lung cancer and, mm-hmm. and surviving many years after completing their treatment.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, how it's changed because, and the way, when someone had cancer, it was, you would think, the layman would think, oh, that's it, that's the end. You know, over the course of my lifetime, I see it turn into, oh, it's no big deal, they just got to do this. I'm like, oh, no big deal, that's great.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I like to really stress upon is because the perception that the patient is and their families and loved ones and their friends, when they hear a diagnosis or even a suspicion for cancer, is their perception really goes through this stage where they are in shock. Their life is completely
sure.
turned upside down. And one of the things that I really stress upon in my encounter with those patients to educate them about, you know, the whole disease process and what the workup and treatment will entail. Oftentimes, just knowing what the steps will be kind of alleviate your anxiety to some degree and give you some sort of relief that, you know, there is a pathway. And I'm very glad that we have all these capabilities and all the expertise available at JFK.
So we're talking about lung cancer. Let's move on to esophageal cancer. Explain exactly what that is, if you would.
So esophagus is part of our gastrointestinal system that connects like a long cylindrical tube that connects the back of our throat to the stomach. And the cancer that affects the esophagus are essentially of two broad categories, the squamous cell and adenocarcinoma. The squamous cell are typically, you know, involve the esophagus higher up, either in the neck or the upper or mid portion of the chest. And adenocarcinoma are more predominant in the lower third of the esophagus. With esophageal cancer, there are certain risk factors. Some of the risk factors, such as the smoking, excessive history of alcohol intake, does increase the risk of cancers like squamous cell in the upper part of the esophagus. And patients with long history of acid reflux can sometimes irritate the inner lining of the lower esophagus and over time can degenerate into adenocarcinoma. The presentation or symptoms from the esophageal cancer varies depending upon the location, basically whether it's causing the esophagus to get occluded from within or it's causing pressure effects on surrounding structures. So most common symptom that patients present with when they have esophageal cancer we call it in medical terminology, dysphagia, where they have difficulty swallowing. And okay. when they are not able to swallow very well, their nourishment gets compromised, and oftentimes they lose weight. And sometimes the presentation can be quite pronounced, where a patient feels that they are losing 10, 20, 30 pounds over the matter of just a few months. So it's very critical that any such symptoms that they get appropriate follow-up with their primary and the gastroenterologist, who are usually along the first line experts to evaluate these cases, and then with the endoscopy, CT scan is oftentimes the next best step to diagnose and confirm whether patients have esophageal cancer.
Is it like lung cancer where esophageal cancer can be far along, a late stage, but you not have symptoms?
Well, the staging algorithm follows the same principle for esophagus,
okay.
where the one component is the location and the size of the tumor and histology. The other component is the lymph node, and a third component is whether it has metastasized. With esophageal cancer, because the way the organ works is, you know, we eat and drink, and if there is any mass in there, it's likely that even at early stage, it may give you some symptoms from just difficulty swallowing, or just some chest tightness or pressure whenever patients swallow, mm-hmm. It would be unlikely for esophageal cancer to be very advanced and completely silent, not knowing anything. So that would be unusual for esophagus.
Okay. Dr. Syed Razi, thoracic surgeon at JFK University Medical Center. For the few minutes that we have left, let's touch on the other types of cancers. I guess we'll stick with the chest cavity, other types of cancers that you treat and how they may be different from what we've discussed.
So there are, a host of other types of cancers affecting the chest cavity. Fortunately, they are relatively rare, but we do have the expertise at JFK to take care of those patients. And they include tumors involving the mediastinum. The mediastinum is a central part of the chest, the sides between the right and the left lung. That's where the heart trachea, the windpipe, and the esophagus resides.
Right.
And we further divide mediastinum into anterior, meaning the front part of the mediastinum and the back, and there are various kinds of tumors that can reside in those locations. Thymomas, schwannomas, other nerve sheath tumors, lymphoma, that we have the capability of from diagnosis to managing those tumors and even operate on those tumors. Additionally, there are cancers involving the chest wall. Sometimes those cancers can be primary tumors of the chest wall, involve the bony structures and the soft tissues of the chest wall, or sometimes it's the lung cancer that is invading through the chest wall that we often encounter in our practice. Last but not the least, mesothelioma. Those are the cancers, especially in patients who have history of asbestos, which could be, 30, 40 years ago. And those asbestos moieties can cause chronic inflammation, and at times patients develop mesothelioma. That's a cancer of the lining of the lung and the inner part of the chest wall called pleura. That's a very deadly cancer, fortunately rare. And that also requires a multimodality treatment strategy, which we are able to provide at JFK.
Okay. Well, thank you. Before we let you go, though, I know that you work out of the JFK University Medical Center at Edison, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, but you deal with the entire central region. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Thanks for mentioning that. So central region of Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK is the main university hospital, but additionally, our service line is in the process of establishing care at Raritan Bay, Old Bridge, and also further south down at the Bayshore Medical Center. I'm a part of a group alongside my partners, Dr. Bora, Dr. Polikidis, and Dr. Latif, who will be joining us shortly. Our group will be providing this comprehensive thoracic surgical services at all these facilities.
Wonderful, wonderful. Dr. Syed Razi, thoracic surgeon at JFK University Medical Center, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Joel. It was a pleasure.
If you would like more info, you can go to jfkmc.org. And if you'd like a podcast of the show, you go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. It's JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. Next week, we'll talk again.